Welcome to Life in Debt, your practical debt education program. This is bankruptcy attorney Robert Liptak. I'm speaking from Crew LP 100.1 FM, the voice of Fairfield, Iowa, an award-winning, listener-supported, open-source grassroots community radio station broadcasting from the Cultural District in Fairfield. Please note that these presentations are provided as a public service for general information purposes only and are not intended to be legal opinions, legal advice, or complete discussions of any legal issues. Remember, every individual's factual situation is different, and you should seek independent legal advice from an attorney familiar with the laws of your state or locality regarding specific information. The name of this show is Life and Debt, and it is a weekly half-hour educational show looking at all types of issues related to debt as it influences your life. This show provides practical, general knowledge about what to look for regarding debt, what are traps and pitfalls, and what to do to be an educated debtor. Please get some notebook, paper, and pen to take notes during the show. First, let's look at some debt-related news and facts for the week. U.S. consumer bankruptcy filings increased 40% nationwide in October 2008 from the same period a year ago, according to ABI, relying on data from the National Bankruptcy Research Center. The overall October consumer filings total of 106,266 also represented a 20% increase from September. Chapter 13 filings constituted 32.6% of all consumer cases in October, a slight decrease from September. The October consumer filing total also represents the first time that bankruptcies have topped 100,000 since the Bankruptcy Abuse Prevention and Consumer Protection Act went into effect in October of 2005. The 880,076 consumer filings through the first 10 months of 2008, January 1st through October 31st, have already eclipsed the filing total of 8,222,590 for all of last year. Consumer electronics retailer Circuit City said this week that it was closing about 20% of its American stores in an effort to return to profitability, the Associated Press reported. The Richmond, Virginia-based company said that it would close 155 of its more than 700 stores in 12 markets, including Phoenix and Atlanta, by December 31st, laying off about 17% of its domestic workforce. Circuit City also said it would further reduce store openings and plan to work with landlords to renegotiate leases, lower rent, or terminate agreements. Looking at the auto industry, GM, Ford, Chrysler shut out of auto bond market for the fifth month. Ford Motor Company, GMAC LLC, and Chrysler LLC were shut out of the market for bonds backed by auto loans for the fifth straight month, adding pressure on the automakers to consider mergers and seek taxpayer funding, Bloomberg News reported yesterday. Sales of auto bonds slumped to $500 million last month, compared with $9 billion in October 2007, according to Merrill Lynch and Company data. The cost to sell the debt surged to record highs over benchmark rates as concern that car owners won't be able to make loan payments amid job losses, higher food and fuel costs, and falling property values. The credit market seizure is forcing automakers to cut back on loans to dealers and customers, contributing to a slowdown that may shrink U.S. auto sales this year to the lowest level since 1993. In other news, the effectiveness of AIG's $143 billion rescue is questioned. A number of financial experts now fear that the federal government's $143 billion attempt to rescue troubled insurance giant American International Group may not work, and some argue that company shareholders and taxpayers would have been better served by a bankruptcy filing, the Washington Post reported last week. The Treasury Department acted quickly to keep AIG from going bankrupt on September 16th, and in the past 7 weeks, AIG has drawn down $90 billion in federal bailout loans. But some key AIG players argue that bankruptcy would have offered more structure and greater protections during a time of intense market volatility. Ann Rutledge, a credit derivatives expert and founding principal of R&R Consulting, said she is not sure how badly the financial system would have been rocked if the government had let AIG file for bankruptcy protection. But she fears that the government is papering over the problem with a quick fix that was not well planned. Quote, "What we see now are a lot of games by the government to keep these institutions going with a lot of cash," she said. "This is to fill holes in companies' balance sheets, and they're trying to hold at bay the charges that our financial system is insolvent," end quote. Early this year, investors had begun privately demanding that AIG pay off its billion-dollar guarantees. But in mid-September, when the demands for cash reached a public crescendo, AIG had to admit that it didn't have enough cash on hand to meet the obligations. And from writer Rebecca Smith, consumers' economic struggles spur more power shutoffs as firms step up collections. She said, "Utilities are becoming more aggressive about collecting money from delinquent customers, leading to a surge in service shutdowns, just as economic woes are pushing up the number of households falling behind on bills." Utilities say they are under pressure to clean out accounts that are weighing down their books at a time when their stocks are being hammered and earnings growth has slowed. Meanwhile, the increasing number of homes left without power, which could rise as economic pain deepens, is beginning to worry some consumer advocates and regulators. In Pennsylvania, PP&L Corp. increased shutoffs by 78% in the first three quarters of the year compared with the same period a year earlier. Shutoffs at electric utilities throughout the state increased by 20% in that period. George Lewis, a spokesman for PP&L, based in Allentown, Pennsylvania, said the utility had been somewhat lax in the past, but decided this year to reverse the trend and prevent people from getting further in debt by cutting them off sooner. About 3% of the company's residential accounts have been disconnected for delinquency. In Memphis, Tennessee, the city-owned utility that supplies electricity, natural gas, and water to residents cut off 38% more people in the first 8 months of the year, or 69,743 electric accounts, versus the same period in 2007. The utility raised electricity rates 20% this year, reflecting increased wholesale power costs for energy. Chris Stanley, a spokesman from the company Memphis Light Gas and Water, said the number of accounts owing more than $900 that were 90 days or more past due was up 148% to 1,766 accounts as of October 28th. The increased number of shutoffs has attracted the attention of some regulators. Dion Greenwich, a member of the California Public Utilities Commission who has responsibility for low-income programs, has begun asking utilities to furnish information on shutoff criteria. She wants commission's staff to take a look and make sure it is being applied fairly. One bright spot is that many utilities will have more money to distribute next year to poor customers through the Low-Income Home Energy Assistance Program. Congress boosted the program's funds for the current fiscal year by 78% to $5.1 billion. Many utilities are trying to get the word out that people should apply because eligibility rules have been expanded, allowing people with higher incomes to qualify. If you are just tuning in, this is bankruptcy attorney Robert Liptak, and this program is Life and Debt, your practical debt education program. I'm speaking from Crew LP 100.1 FM, the voice of Fairfield, Iowa, and beyond. Moving on to section two of the show, we're going to discuss how you can help yourself in dealing with debt problems despite all of the bigger national and global issues regarding the economy. An important credit, the thoughts, ideas, and examples used in these programs are directly from or based on the work, theories, and books of Professor Elizabeth Warren from Harvard and her daughter Amelia Warren Tyagi, two of America's leading champions for debtors. I highly recommend their books, All Your Worth and The Two Income Trap. You can also visit the archives of my show at www.kruufm.com under Archives, Life, and Debt, where you can get the entire ascending education of the concepts we're dealing with in this show from Professor Warren. And the points we're going to review from last week were how to negotiate your medical bills. If you do not have health insurance, as I said, you should always try to negotiate the price of your medical care. And the reason for that is because sophisticated buyers never pay sticker prices for medical care. Not the insurance company, not Medicare, not even rich people. And there are ways to deal with this. The first thing, as I mentioned last week, is to talk with your doctor. Your doctor knows you personally and is more likely to help you out. You need to explain your particular personal circumstances and ask for a discount or a payment plan on your treatment. And this can be very effective. And you will be surprised how quickly the doctor can understand your predicament and help you out. One tip that Professor Warren gives, even if you have health insurance, you can also ask your doctor not to bill you for the copay. Technically, doctors aren't supposed to agree to this, but many will do that when you ask, according to Professor Warren. And it is also surprising how much of a discount that you can actually get when you do ask doctors, sometimes even up to 40% discount for those who do ask. So it certainly does not hurt to take that chance and try to negotiate the bill. Also, an aside point, if you need some outside services such as hospital or lab services, you can ask your doctor to negotiate a discount on your behalf because the doctor has a lot more pull with the hospital administrators than you do. So this can work, again, reducing your overall cost for the medical event. The second point we discussed was the need for prescriptions and asking for free samples. And it is a common fact that most medical practices have closets filled with samples. And those samples were freely dropped off by various drug representatives. And those samples usually just sit there, except when a patient asks a doctor to help them out. The doctor can cheerfully hand over a month's supply of those free samples. So if you are struggling to pay for your subscriptions, ask your doctor for those samples. There's no point paying for them if you can get them for free. I also mentioned that if your doctor doesn't have any free samples, you can also go to check online and find out whether the drug company offers some discounts for people with moderate income. You can also look online and see if you can get your drugs from Canada. And those drugs certainly are much cheaper. And with your doctor, you can check out to make sure that they are safe, which they should be. And then thirdly, you can also see if there are some programs for medical discount cards that are available for you. And also, very importantly, make sure that when your doctor writes the prescription, that it is for the generic type of drug rather than the brand name stuff. It's the same kind of drug, but it's much, much cheaper. And the third way to negotiate is if you can't get your doctor to agree to negotiate, your best bet is to basically have some savings, some cash, and then call the medical center's billing department and make an offer. Many of them will automatically take up to 30% off the bill if you have a cash payment right away and available for cleaning up your account. And like most things, this is only going to be given to people who ask for the discount. And if it turns out that your first attempt is rejected, why don't you call back and ask for a supervisor who may at that point have a little bit more latitude and want to negotiate to get this bill off their account. And then the last point with negotiating medical bills and dealing with medical bills is really not to put them on your credit card. It's better to make those kinds of direct payments to medical providers. They will actually, as I said, have more negotiating leverage, and you will be able to generally construct a payment plan with them, whereas if you're putting it on your credit card, then you are paying high interest rates and you're not getting very good terms generally at all. Whereas working with the medical provider, they will often give you much better terms and in many cases a no interest payment plan. The next thing I discussed last week was the idea of basically cutting up your credit cards, because now that you've been working on your debt repayment plan and you have this under control based on all of the programs you've listened to and all of the points that have come out from Professor Warren, what you want to do is to avoid the backsliding. Part of the big conditions in this program is that you promised you would not take on any new debt. And of course, you need to mean that. But there are many, many times when we find ourselves in a little bit of a pinch, and then there is the temptation to use the credit card. This is kind of a backsliding situation. But with all of the heavy advertising and lures to spend, and to throw down the plastic, it's really easy to fall into that temptation and backslide. So the notion is to basically cut up the credit cards, put them in a graveyard, melt them over the stove, take out the shears and cut them into little bits, fold them back and forth until they pop, and that's that. Just hold in your mind that you really can't afford these cards anymore. You know from personal experience that you have lived with the consequences, which are dire, of credit cards, and you have paid the price, and you never want to pay it again. So take the cards out of your wallet, and then that's that with credit card. And the response to the question of, well, sometimes I absolutely need credit cards for certain kinds of payments or bills, car rentals or hotel rentals, purchasing something on the internet. Well, actually, you can get a debit card from your bank, as we had discussed in the past, which will be treated just the same as a credit card, and the money just comes out directly from the savings, which you have now developed through your planning, and there is no interest or fees associated with that. If you are just tuning in, this is bankruptcy attorney Robert Liptak, and this program is Life and Debt, your practical debt education program. I'm speaking from Crew LP 100.1 FM, the voice of Fairfield, Iowa, and beyond. So the new points I'd like to raise this week are the top myths about credit cards. First myth, and this is something that many of us fall a trap to, is that credit cards are a good way to keep track of what you spend. Well, in fact, credit cards make it really easy to lose track of how much you have spent and what you can actually afford because of the way the contracts are written and also the changes that are constantly happening in those contracts. And finally, because these statements become very, very hard to read, particularly from month to month and the transitions from month to month. So you're not keeping track of what you spend while you're spending it, and when you do finally get the statement, it is very confusing. There's also a common myth that it's easy to use your credit card without getting in trouble. Well, the fact is that credit card companies hire thousands of very, very highly skilled business people whose sole job is to get you in trouble. Almost no one outsmarts them forever. So you need to be extraordinarily careful, which frankly, almost no one can do all the time. Another myth, the third one, which is kind of interesting and very common with most people, is that you need a credit card to build your credit. The fact is that credit cards are more likely to get you in trouble and ruin your credit than building your credit. Paying your bills on time is the best way to build your credit, and you have lots of other bills that you can pay without credit cards, whether that's a student loan, a phone bill, electricity bill, car payment. These do not have to have any credit card association with them at all. The fourth myth is that it is smart to use credit cards because you get frequent flyer miles. Well, the fact is, if you work out the math and you look at it, for most people, most frequent flyer miles never even get used. You need too many to really use them, which means you have to buy a lot. And with the fees and interest credit cards charge, you are better off buying your own ticket. The fifth myth is that credit cards are a smart way to pay your other bills automatically. Well, the fact is that you aren't paying your bills. You are just shifting from one outstanding bill to another, usually with a higher interest rate. And so you're not eradicating your debt, which is the whole point of this show, because that's the valuable status you want to find yourself in, a debt-free human being. The sixth myth is that credit cards are a good way to donate to your favorite group. The fact is that most credit card companies give only a tiny fraction of what you charge to the charity you designate. Get your money in balance and write your own check directly to your favorite charity. It's a much better way to help them out. And the last myth, number seven, is if you get approved for a higher limit, you can afford to spend that much. And the simple factual answer to that is that credit card companies want you to charge more than you can afford because, frankly, that's how they make money. Okay, so now it seems like credit cards are completely out of the question, and generally that is true. However, it is possible for some people who can resist temptation to hold on to a credit card for, quote, emergencies only, end quote. Again, exclamation point, emergencies only. And you have to be clear on what is an emergency. And when we're talking about an emergency, we're talking about really life and death kind of situations, health situations that are extreme, and there really is no time to get money from any other source to deal with this very, very critical situation. You'll have to define that in terms of your own life and circumstances, but certainly this does not mean shopping for holidays or getting some kind of clothing item, buying something at a sale just because it's on sale, or entertaining people who will unexpectedly come to your house. In effect, whatever method and definition you choose, the point is to force yourself to ask always, at least one more time, is this really an emergency? And if not, then do not use the card, do not take on any more debt, and do not spend. However, if you are the kind of a person that is not very able to resist temptation, then as I mentioned before, just scissors the card, throw them away, and you will be building up some savings as part of your entire plan, and you will find ways, creative ways, to manage life's little kinds of crises without the cards. And the truth of the matter is, if something goes wrong and you absolutely need to get a credit card, you will always see someone out there in the credit card industry trying to get you to sign up for another credit card so you can at that point. Thus, the bottom line is just keep the credit cards out of your wallet and you're in a much better situation. Now that you're listening to this, you may be realizing that paying off debt can have its very, very tough sides to it. It takes some hard work and discipline and, frankly, a dedication to you, your family, and your future. Getting debts paid off will be easier as you pay one off and then another and then another, and it makes your life much more happy and lighter, and your whole outlook begins to change as you pull out of debt and you are starting to build a really firm, solid foundation for your future. Now, the next step in the Build Your Dreams, All Your Worth program is to do it one step at a time and one little step at a time. You want to consider all the things you need to save for and all the things you want to save for, whether that's a home, retirement, helping out a charity, taking a vacation, sending your kids to college, buying some new material thing, a vehicle, whatever. The way to get there is to follow the formula and to continue to maintain that formula, and one step at a time, you will achieve the goal of having wealth over time. Once that debt is gone and once you are able to take your money and save it based on the formulas that we have constructed throughout this course, once you've paid off your debt, as Professor Warren says, that you can build your mansion one brick at a time. And she actually gives some nice math that is able to convince us. If we're earning $30,000 a year and we take our 20% of estimated after-tax income as savings, that's $4,320 a year. And if that gets projected out with a moderate annual return, let's say 12% on your income, after 25 years, that would be $576,000 that you have saved just by following that pattern. If it's a larger income, your annual income is $50,000, then 20% of your estimated after-tax income would be $7,200 of savings. And using that same 12% annual return for long-term investments, you would have $960,000 in 25 years. And of course, there's a lot of things that will change in that process, but just in terms of the math, the simple math, you're looking at being able to save a lot of money over a long period of time and making a lot of money on what you're saving if, in fact, you just are prudent with your balanced life in financial areas. Your debt has been abolished. You've eradicated it from your savings and planning by following the points that have been outlined in the show. And ultimately, you can have what you want. Next week, we'll look at the four stages of your lifetime savings plan now that your debt has been dealt with. And the final tip for the week: whenever you have changes to your automobile insurance needs, get multiple quotes from different companies. For example, if you add a car or driver to your policy, or remove a vehicle or operator, like your teenager goes off to college without a car, don't just go by the changed quote from your current company. You will be surprised how much savings you can make by shopping around. I just recently sold and dropped a car from a very good policy and noted that the reduction in the new premium seemed good, but not great. So I went back to a former company I had, gave them the new circumstances, and was able to save hundreds of dollars on the automobile premium, plus an additional 10% on my home insurance. Insurance companies use very different underwriting standards, so check them out, explore, shop, and enjoy the savings. This is bankruptcy attorney Robert Liptak, and you have been listening to Life and Debt, your debt education program. If you have any questions or comments, call the station at 641-209-1083, or you can email me at lifeanddebt@gmail.com. I am speaking from Crew LP 100.1 FM, the voice of Fairfield, Iowa. May you enjoy and have a healthy and prosperous debt manageable life. You are listening to the open source sounds of Wicked All Stars. The song is Jazz House from the album Dark Clouds, which is available from Magnatune.